Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
This is John.
Here's John Williams.
We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, weekdays 1 to 3 and Saturdays 10 to noon. Social media, you do that. I'm WGN King John. Look for us there. It's a Wednesday. Tomorrow, the Mincing Rascals drop. The Mincing Rascals, the weekly podcast where we kick around stories in the news. And I suppose the Rascals will be talking tomorrow about what we're talking about and waiting for today. The story of A.J. Friend's body apparently has been found. We're awaiting that press conference. Stand by. That may be a notice about that. I'm not sure that it is. You know, I was reading from the Sun-Times story today about this. This is before, of course, we knew that they may be announcing that the body has been found. And they talk about a little bit what A.J.'s life was probably like, based on the number of visits that the police and DCFS have had to that house over the years. The Sun-Times wrote, newly released records on Tuesday shed light on the squalid conditions in the home of a 5-year-old Crystal Lake boy where he lived. Police released more than 60 pages of records detailing 5 years of calls to the home. So for all of this child's life, authorities have been in and out. He wasn't even there for 18 months of it. After he was born, he was found with opiates in his system, so he wasn't even with the mother when he was first born or shortly thereafter, obviously. Police also released a recording of the father's call to 911 that he made at 9.04 a.m. on April 18th. On that call, Andrew Friend Sr. in a calm voice can be heard telling a police dispatcher that he could not find his son that morning. "We have a missing child," he tells the dispatcher before trailing off. We talked a lot about that call yesterday, the release of the call, the motive of the call. I happen to agree with what Wendy said when she and Bill were talking about this earlier today, again, before we knew anything more about this. And she said that she thought that that was trying to influence people. Now, Wendy, I wrote down exactly how you put it, and now I've lost my note. But she, like me, was questioning the, I don't know, value maybe of releasing that audio of that call. I think any information that can be released was a good idea. I think judging the way people act when their child is missing is fraught with danger. I'm not sure that we are all in a position to judge someone's guilt or innocence by the audio of a 911 call. After the fact, we may say it was more telling, but that's after the fact. At the time, you just can't know. Police records show that Andrew's mother, Joanne Cunningham, back to the Sun-Times now, was arrested the same day that her son was reported missing on a McHenry County warrant, charging her with failing to appear in court on a driving with a suspended license charge. The day he's missing, last Wednesday, police records show that she was arrested on a McHenry County warrant, charging her with failing to appear in court. Why was she supposed to be in court the day that her son was missing? She was driving with a suspended license. They had a charge against her. She was supposed to go to court the day that AJ went missing. Sun-Times writes that arrest stemmed from a December incident when she drove to a Taco Bell to see if someone could call police for her in order to file a burglary report. Cunningham told officers that responded that she believed someone had stolen her phone and medications. So she doesn't have her phone. She thinks someone stole the phone and the medications. Now she can't call police, so she walks into the Taco Bell and says, "Hey, could somebody make this call for me?" When Cunningham returned to her home with the officers, they asked to look inside and found the dwelling to be cluttered, dirty, and in disrepair. The officers were concerned about the living conditions at the home. They noted dog feces and urine throughout the house and broken windows. The records also noted that portions of the kitchen floor were jagged and broken off. The kitchen ceiling appeared to have water damage. and several windows were left open. Upstairs in the room where the boys slept, the window was open, and the smell of feces was overwhelming, an officer wrote. The officers also noticed a large bruise on the right hip of one of the boys and reported the injury to the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, which had been in contact with the family multiple times since 2013 when Andrew was born with opiates in his system. The boy told the officers that the bruise was from the family dog jumping on him. An investigator was ultimately unable to determine the cause of the bruise. Police later arrested her, the mother, on driving with a suspended license. She was then released and allowed to return to her home with her children. 3 months earlier, records show police had been called to the home to do a well-being check after someone reported that family had been living without power for weeks. 3 months earlier, what's that, January, February, March? This is April, so that would have been February. So in February, police had been called to the home to do a well-being check after someone said they didn't have power. An officer was denied entry by Cunningham, but saw both children who, quote, appeared happy and healthy. What, according to the police, through the crack in the door? It's so easy to get angry at the people whose jobs it is to safeguard these children. And I don't want to necessarily do that. But I will share my sympathy, my frustration that you may have with a system that I think makes it too difficult to take children out of houses like that. The children's place should be with their parents. But I think you and I could make the call more easily sometimes and say, yeah, this is a bad situation. And as bad as it is to separate the kids from the family, it might be better than what that situation is at their home. I've always been very, I don't know if this makes me conservative or liberal about this, but I have less interest in reuniting these kinds of children with those kinds of parents than evidently the system does. Maybe I'm an outlier. But when you read reports like this, you have to scratch your head and say, why didn't we do something before? It's 1:13. We're still waiting that press conference. We'll keep you posted live here on WGN. Cheryl, this is John. You're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Yeah, John, you know, I've just been thinking since I heard this story, like, it makes me sick on so many levels. But the biggest is that the fact that this child, I believe, had been born addicted to opiates. So she should have never had care from him from day one, in my opinion. If she couldn't stay clean and sober for the duration of her pregnancy and gave birth to a child addicted to drugs, he should have never been placed in her care. Period. I mean, I just don't see how you give a... I mean, really, am I alone in this?
Say it again.
Am I alone in thinking that?
Like, the only word I would quibble with you is over is never. You say never, but no, I think we have decided as a state that it's going to be this easy or hard to reunite those families, and this is what happens when we do that, right? Like, whatever happened to that little boy, you and I didn't do it, but the state could be stricter about this. The police and DCF should either have more resources or more ability to separate kids like that from mothers and fathers like that. I'm completely with you on that.
Yeah, because then if you look from what you were reading at the state of the home, doesn't sound like anyone was too equipped to properly take care of them either. And the younger one has been removed, correct?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, it's sad all the way around.
Thanks for the call, and I appreciate your thoughts. I mean, what are we going to do about it now? I was reading online today, and there was a story about the ACLU voicing their frustration with DCFS about how they don't have more of a hands-on approach. And my guess is that that's a matter of law, and that's a matter of financing. That if we had more investigators who are more empowered, maybe it wouldn't be like this. I'm sure if you're a caseworker, you can tell me about all of the cases you have and how impossible it is to keep up. So, Illinois's got nothing but debt. So just add that to the list of, gee, I wish we could do a better job of that things, because this needs to move up on the list. This needs to move up on the list. And even if you had more investigators, more hands-on in cases like this, I'm not sure the legislators listening right now would say, yeah, let's further empower the state to take kids away from families. But I think that deserves a little consideration today. And I think you agree with me on that. There are probably stories out there about mothers and fathers who, after having been addicted to drugs and maybe even born children who were addicted to drugs, got better and the family was better. And it's a very good story. But I wonder how many of those we have compared to how many of these. I'm leaning the other direction, man. I'm saying, no, let's intervene. And let's intervene for a really long time. And that will be a different life for that child. And it might not be perfect. Foster care isn't a panacea. But I'm going to roll the dice with the system more than I am some of these people. You walk into the house and there's dog droppings all over. There's broken windows all over. Some people are poor and can't afford better conditions, but you can take the dog out. And by the way, wasn't the man living in that house an attorney? You know, when you walk by, when you see him, it looks to me like they have clothes on and seem to be able to function at some level. You can't fix the window. You can't police yourself. So when you walk in, you just go, okay, whatever the income or socioeconomic status or intelligence of these people is, something's wrong here. Maybe it's people are using drugs. Maybe it's people aren't mentally well, but something's wrong. I don't even have to know what it is. I can just tell by what I see that no child should be living there. But we don't do anything about that. And I'm not passing the buck saying these people aren't responsible. Ultimately, whoever did this is. But we're going to have more of these if we don't think, yeah, we need to better empower the state to intervene. I reached out to DCFS before we walked in and invited them to join us on the show. I could see, given how volatile and sensitive this story is today, maybe they don't want to talk to us, but maybe today would be a good day to do it, because I'm not blaming DCFS. I'm not blaming the police. All I'm saying is, should we reconsider how effective those agencies are going to be? This is Lou. You're on WGN. Lou, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, King John, thanks. Listen, I am blaming DCFS, and in light of what the governor, new governor has done, appointed another director. How many directors have we had with DCSF? It's an inadequate system that the state tolerates.
It is, and that. It is absolutely that. It's an inadequate system that we tolerate.
Here's a child dead. You know, I mean, how many more do we have to, how many more children have to die?
That's Lou on line one. Lou, thank you for the call. Ramona, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
I just want to say, I mean, if once you start seeing that there's red flags, I don't understand why DCFS doesn't go more often to the house. I understand their thing is to keep families together, but once you see stuff like this going on, don't you think that you would be at that house making surprise visits several times?
More than 100.
Just to make sure that.
There have been more than 100 people DCFS is looking into who have died in the last couple of years. This is an extraordinary case, but and sometimes those children died from accidents, sometimes they died from natural causes, and sometimes they did not. The only conclusion I can draw is that they have their hands tied.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they're overworked.
But yeah, when you see red flags like that, right, Ramona, you somebody needs to knock on that door every day. Did you pick up the dog dirt on the floor yet? We're back. Hello? Hello?
Exactly. It just would take me a quick 5-10 minute visit. How many more bruises does that kid have? I mean, kids get bruises, but it's just strange-looking kids get bruises in certain places. It wouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, those bruises are, talk about your red flag. The dog, really, the dog dumped on the kid and gave the kid a Somebody tell me how many times your dog has bruised the kid when he jumped on the kid. I want to see that scenario, because I don't know how that happens.
Well, my kids got pulled over at school. I was always thankful because my kids played sports. They played hockey and lacrosse, and they would get pulled in almost every year by the nurse asking about the bruises, and they said, oh, that's from hockey or lacrosse. They look where they are, and they're like, yeah, okay, they probably are. But I was always thankful that somebody cared.
And the school actually pulled your kids aside to ask them about that. So if there was a problem, they would have had an opportunity and in confidence to tell the nurse, huh?
Exactly. And it happened every year. Both my kids played hockey and both of them played lacrosse.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Ramona. Have a good day. The number is 312-981-7200. It's 125. The press conference scheduled at noon and then 1 o'clock has obviously been delayed. Orion Burrow is there. We'll keep you posted. Take Lauren on line 3. Lauren, you're on WGN Radio. Hi.
Hi. I'm in no way, defending what has happened here, but I do work for an agency that works with DHS in Iowa, so it's a little different than Illinois. But oftentimes it's not DHS and DCFS that's making those house calls. It's usually another agency like my own where I've got a caseload of about 15 families that I have to go see every week usually. And that sometimes puts me into 20 hours of overtime. So we do what we can. But for me, I think it's both funding and it's got to be a law thing because we have to make sure we do something called reasonable efforts. And in my opinion, it should be more reasonable efforts need to be shown on the parent side than our side, but we get in trouble more.
Really? If you,
you know, the parents do.
What do you mean we get in trouble more? What would an example be?
If a parent isn't doing their part to maybe make proper medical appointments for a child, they get a slap on the wrist. But if I myself am not providing information to that parent to do that, then I could be held in contempt in court because I'm not providing reasonable efforts to that family to provide them with the information and resources to do what they need to do as a parent.
Is it possible in your estimation that in your work life, something like this could happen to you? Somebody in your care, if you will, would turn up missing, might be killed, and you go, doggone it, I was working on that case, but I did all I could. I mean, is it possible the story could play out again on your jurisdiction?
Yeah. In my own agency, we had something like that happen where we weren't sure why an infant passed away. And the parents did have that child born with opiates in their system, but they were engaged in treatment. They were doing what they were supposed to do for mental health stuff. And it turned out that child died of SIDS, but it could have been because of something else, you know.
Do you wish you had more power to, as I said earlier, separate the kids from the family?
Yeah, in emergency situations, absolutely. But there's like a checks and balances that you have to go through. And the best thing we can do is something called a safety case where we see that family every single day. And usually there's only funding to do that for 2 weeks period at a time.
Okay, what
and
do you
sometimes
think?
These parents get their act together for, you know, that period of time and then that's all we can do. And
well, that's what it sounds
renewed,
like in this case. The police knock on the door and they say, well, the kids look okay today, so I guess things are all right, and they're not all right at all. What do you make of this?
Yeah.
If I knock on the door and there's the dogs haven't been taken outside and there's a bruise on the kid, I'm marching those kids out right now, putting them in the back of the car, and we're leaving. What do you think of that heavy-handedness that I'm advocating?
Oh, boy. That would make me nervous. I think that puts the workers in danger. You're going to get, you know, parents who are angry. Some of these parents have firearms. Yeah. We aren't allowed to carry any weapons to protect ourselves. I'm not even allowed to have mace. So you have to think about the safety of the worker, too, because we don't wear, you know, equipment like police officers do. And we're just regular people for the most part. We don't have a lot of training for those kinds of things. So if we did have training or we were allowed to maybe carry something with us to protect ourselves, then I'd feel more comfortable with that.
Yeah.
But if that was something that I might have to do in the moment, I don't know if I'd be at this job because I have kids myself.
This is a very good call. Lauren is with an agency that works with DHS in Iowa. Different place, similar kind of stories. I sure appreciate your call. Thank you, Lauren.
You're welcome.
They don't need to rush that press conference on account of me, Steve, but any idea what the delay is here? I guess they're just waiting to get their facts right and how they're going to say what they're going to say.
Other things to do. I mean, they collected quite a lot of evidence, and I don't know what the delay is, but It's a lengthy one. I mean, they first said it, I think it was
noon.
In the 9 o'clock hour, we learned there'd be a 12 o'clock news conference, so they certainly thought they'd be done by then.
They walked out of the house with a shovel, which was was kind of alarming.
Well, they took several things. They took a mattress. They took several items, presumably for evidence.
Tubs.
Yeah, yeah. You just, you know, you wonder. Lots of texts, lots of phone calls about this. If you're just joining us, I noted the reporting on the number of visits the police and DCFS have had to that home over the years, over the entire life of A.J. Friend, 18 months of which he wasn't there. He was born with opiates in his system and was removed from the family and then evidently reunited. I guess they passed some sort of test. DCFS and the police have checked on them over the years, and it's never been really good. And I was just telling you about my frustration with a system that allows those kids to stay in those kinds of homes. The texts include these. You need a license to do everything in this country except have a child. We need to reconsider this. 630 said, let's not forget that woman is 7 months pregnant. 815 said, 63 pages of police reports going back years and years, and every police officer in Crystal Lake visited that home, and nobody did anything for that boy. Listen, I'll just say what I said again, and you can think or feel whatever you want, but I'm not blaming the police or DCFS here. My guess is they are overworked, underpaid, understaffed, and probably bound by rules and laws that you and I might conclude are a little too restrictive, that too much favor the family rather than the kid. I don't know why we do that, except kids are kids, and maybe adults have a better way to advocate for themselves, these parents that want to keep their children for whatever reason. If you have broken windows, a kitchen floor that's torn up, a leaky roof, and you don't take the dog out, do you really want kids? I've never understood parents who fight for kids under those circumstances. Clearly, they don't want them. And I don't know how many people in foster care are waiting for more AJ friends out there, but maybe we need to reconsider how we do that too. DCFS says 708 is like having a court-appointed attorney. They're overwhelmed, overworked. Most representatives are burned out and pencil-whipping cases to keep clear the books. 815, DCFS has a lot of rules to follow. 815 says, this happens, but watch how fast DCFS shows up if you spank your kid for discipline. Yeah, you know, I'm thinking of that family, was it out east, who DCFS visited when the parents allowed the children to walk to school. I'm not worried about those cases. Danielle, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you? You're on the air.
You know, I actually live in Crystal Lake, and I am a drug abuse counselor. So I actually deal with some of the families in these situations that actually are fighting for their children in DCFS.
Yeah.
And it just bothers me that we are putting so much judgment on a report. Meaning in the fact of, and I know my views will be unsatisfactory to some, and that's okay, but just meaning that if you walk in my house right now, I have a broken window. Does that mean that I don't care for my children? No, it means a child broke it, and I just haven't gotten to it yet. I mean, when they're walking in and they're seeing something, yes, they have to document it, but the fact that the police officers or DCFS did not find cause on these actions in order to do something tells me a lot, meaning that I see a lot of people that have their children taken away for very small infractions. So it would be very difficult for me to say that they would walk in the house, see that it was dilapidated for a lot of time, that it wasn't currently under construction type of issues, and that they wouldn't have stepped in.
So you think, I mean, based on what we know today, if you'd walked into the Friend house, what would your reaction been?
My reaction would have been of, hey, what's going on with this? You know what I mean? Are you currently working on your kitchen floor? Is there any intentions of fixing the window? You know, why is there feces on the floor? It would be questions, not assumptions. And I think that's where I just kind of get a little emotional on it, that we just assume based on these reports that either, one, this is how it's always is, and two, is that nobody stepped in order to take any action if this was the status of the house all the time.
Do you think that the authorities should have more authority to remove the kids, or are you satisfied with the way the checks and balances are structured?
I am not satisfied with this, with the checks and balances. However, I do see that there are a lot of kids taken away for the wrong reasons too quickly, or for other reasons. I think there has to be a better procedure, but I don't think the answer is to taking away the kids. I think they need more resources. They definitely need more staff. And in McHenry County, we actually have an agency called CASA, which actually helps the children that are going through court procedures for whatever reason. That needs to be really built up so that they have those resources they can depend on. I don't think taking a child away is the first answer. I think there has to be some way of helping the family in order to build themselves.
One last.
And unfortunately, you look at like parenting classes, and those are not structured, state structured, meaning any agency can open up a parenting class and decide how long it's going to be for. That's frustrating to me as a provider.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't need a parenting class to tell me if the dog goes to the bathroom on the living room floor, you pick it up, and that if the windows are broken in the boy's bedroom and it's February, you need to fix that tomorrow. You need to fix that yesterday. I mean, I listen, you're a good call, and you're more expert on this than I am, Danielle, but some of this just sounds really obvious to me.
Right, and I didn't see that it was February, but, I mean, my second question to that would be, did they cover it up? Was it taped? Was it something? Are we talking about a window that just had open exposure to the outside?
I don't know.
Where I kind of go to those secondary questions. As a provider, I don't make judgments. I definitely ask questions in order to get to the bottom line of it. I mean, I sit back and I'm looking at my house and it has a broken window right now, but I have it covered and there's a second window behind it. And it's in my own bedroom, so therefore it's not that big of a deal.
One last thing. Can you speak at all, based on your experience? You said you're a drug counselor in that area and you work with some of these families. Can you talk at all about the backlog that everybody's dealing with?
I know that the last DCFS caseworker that I talked to about, another client, she had stated she has over 100 children that she has to watch out for. I mean, that right there is enough to tell you that they are overwhelmed and that they don't have enough resources to actually deal with everything they have in front of them.
I hope the governor's listening to you right now.
Oh, I do too. They definitely need help. But like I said, CASA is an agency out in McHenry, and they really are asking for volunteers to go and help them, to do those family checks, to deal with it, talk to the children and see what's really going on from the children's eyes, and then sit in a courtroom and talk to the judges and attorneys and everybody else that's involved in these cases.
CASA.
That also needs to be promoted.
Is that
CASA? C-A-S-A.
And that's an agency in McHenry County?
It is. It's also in King County, but I know I have dealt with one in McHenry.
What does CASA stand for?
I'd have to really look it up. It's children something.
Advocacy, safety, something or another, right? Okay.
Yes.
Everybody can Google that, and maybe we can help. I so appreciate your listening. Thank you for the call, Danielle.
Thank you.
It's 146. This is WGN. Still waiting word from the Crystal Lake Police Department. If you're just joining us, Daniel Friend's body has evidently been found in an area about 7 miles northwest of his home. We're waiting a fuller report from the police. We're talking about the next case, the next AJ. What are we going to do about that? Lots of texts and some pretty helpful phone calls here. I appreciate the last few calls we've had. I think as much as we're all expressing our frustration, anger, and sorrow for what it appears we're about to hear from the Crystal Lake Police Department, doggone it, let's talk about the next case and what we can all be thinking about, be telling your state legislator about, be telling the governor about. You're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your existing home, you need to call Team Hochberg. How'd you like to win free rent payment for a month? That's right, a free rent payment. You need to enter Team Hochberg's free rent payment sweepstakes. If you rent in Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, or Iowa, Team Hochberg wants to pay your rent. This is true. Team Hochberg wants to pay your rent. Entry is free. And you can't win Team Hochberg's free rent payment sweepstakes if you don't register at 56DavidWinRent.com. 56David. Let me get this right, David. 56DavidWinRent.com. He's doing the rent one because earlier he was making mortgage payment for folks, and some people said, hey, David, I'm a renter. How about me? And he said, let's do one for you. So there it is. Go to 56DavidWinRent.com. Write that down. What are you waiting for? If you want to work with a lender who will always look out for you and your best interest, like maybe making your next rent payment, Team Hochberg's the one to call. You can find out more about them generally at 56DavidWinRent.com. Homeside Financial is an equal housing lender. Their NMLS ID number is 1124061.
John, just an FYI, in 5 minutes, the press conference will begin.
Okay, it's 11, it's a 1:51, so maybe time for just another call or two here before we hear from Crystal Lake. Mary Ann, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi, John. My husband is a CASA in Kane County. CASA stands for Court Appointed Special Advocate. And in Kane County, and as the other caller said, I guess McHenry is the same, these people are volunteers, but they are responsible for a child or, in many cases, children, if there's more than one in a family, and they go to all court hearings with them. They visit them at least once a month, and generally most of them spend a lot more time with these kids. But as I said, they are volunteers, but they go through very extensive training and continued training. In many other counties, I believe also in Illinois, but at least across the country, most of these people, they're also called guardian ad litem, but most of them are actually attorneys. But in Kane County, you don't have to be an attorney. But as I said, they go through a pretty extensive training and continuing training and lots of support because, yeah, as you can imagine, these people deal with kids in all kinds of situations.
Well, answer me this, when, based on your husband's experience, when the court appoints him as a special advocate for the child, how welcoming or resistant are the parents?
It depends. It depends on the situation. Some are, some aren't. But in most cases, like I said, they are working in conjunction with DCFS and of course, the judges. Most, like in Kane County, they kind of rotate, but a judge is responsible for these cases for a period of time. It'll always be such and such a judge.
What do you and your husband think about this story as it's been unfolding? I mean, does he run into stuff like this? I'm just saying, yank the kids out of there yesterday. I wonder what the two of you think about my heavy-handedness here.
Well, I agree that, they should be able to remove a child probably a little easier than they do in some situations. But I do also know that these people in DCFS are just so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I can imagine, as I said, each county is a little different, so... I know Cook County's DCFS they just cut terrible turnover, and as you can imagine, the emotional toil that these people go through, when something like this happens.
I'm really glad your husband is doing what he's doing. I'm really glad you called. Marianne, I have to go because we're ready for that press conference, but you know what? I'm a big advocate for CASA now. Thanks,
John,
to you.
Let's go live to Crystal Lake where the news conference is just getting underway.
Just finalizing some of the details that we wanted to release today. My name is Jim Black. I'm the Chief of Police for the City of Crystal Lake. I know you've all been following this case over the last 6 days as events have unfolded. I have a brief statement prepared, and I will not be taking any questions as this is still an active and ongoing investigation, and we are still reviewing and processing evidence at this time. Special Agent in Charge of the FBI Office, Jeff Sillette, is here with me today. He will be giving a brief statement when I conclude my briefing. It is with heavy heart that the Crystal Lake Police Department reports that we have located what we believe to be the body of Andrew A.J. Friend earlier this morning. During the overnight hours, investigators with the Crystal Lake Police Department and the FBI interviewed both the mother, Joanne Cunningham, and the father, Andrew Friend Sr., after information was obtained through a forensic analysis of cell phone data. Once presented with the evidence obtained by investigators, both Joanne and Andrew Sr. provided information that ultimately led to the recovery, what we believe is the recovery, of deceased subject AJ. Investigators located what they believe to be AJ's body, buried in a shallow grave wrapped in plastic in a remote area of Woodstock, Illinois. The McHenry County Coroner's Office is on scene with the FBI Evidence Recovery Unit right now as we speak. The cause of death is unknown at this time, and it will be determined at a later date by the McHenry County Coroner's Office. Based on the current information and evidence, both Joanne Cunningham and Andrew Friend are being charged with the death and disappearance of AJ. Both are in police custody at this time. Joanne Cunningham has been charged with 5 counts of first-degree murder, 4 counts of aggravated battery, 2 counts of aggravated domestic battery, and 1 count of failure to report a missing or child death. Andrew Friend Sr. has been charged with 5 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of aggravated battery, 1 count of aggravated domestic battery, 2 counts of concealment of homicidal death, and 1 count of failure to report missing or child death. On behalf of the Crystal Lake Police Department, I would like to thank the FBI, the McHenry County State's Attorney's Office, and other local, state, and county law enforcement and fire department and emergency management entities. Their assistance was instrumental in bringing closure to this investigation. To AJ's family, it is my hope that you may have some solace in knowing that AJ is no longer suffering and his killers have been brought to justice. I would also like to thank the community for their support and assistance during this difficult time. To AJ, we know you are at peace playing in heaven's playground and are happy you no longer have to suffer. The outcome of this case is a result of the extraordinary efforts of all the investigators directly involved in this case. Because the charges resulting from this investigation are based largely on evidence recovered, we will not be providing any further details in an effort to protect the integrity of this criminal prosecution. Thank you.
That is Jim Black, the police chief of Crystal Lake, announcing charges against the parents of AJ Friend, now the FBI.
Thank you, Chief Black, to members of the community, to AJ's family. Our deepest and heartfelt condolences on AJ's loss. This is not the outcome that we want to talk about when we come before you, but it is the unfortunate result in this investigation. I spent the last 2 hours here with the folks that are conducting this investigation, and I want to tell you how personally proud I am to be a member of the law enforcement community and to call the chief a partner and a friend. Listening to the emotion and the commitment that our folks as a team have exhibited over the last 6 days to bring justice really, really brings a lot of emotion to me. And those emotions are mixed. One is that emotion of pride to be part of something that is positive, which is the outcome of getting justice. Part two is the sadness that we have a dead 5-year-old child who has now been recovered based on the efforts of some incredible investigative work. Talking through the investigation with my troops and the troops of the chief, it was apparent to me that nobody was going to sleep and nobody will sleep until justice is brought for AJ. This is the beginning of that process and the process of healing for your community and for the family. But please know that local, state, and federal law enforcement stand side by side to ensure that we follow through and that justice is served. I want to thank the Crystal Lake Police Department for your incredible professionalism and your commitment to keeping your community safe. Thank you for inviting the FBI in to assist you in bringing justice. And I want to give a personal thanks to all of my troops who have been out here 24 hours a day since Thursday morning to make sure that justice is brought. Thank you.
You've been listening to live coverage of a news conference, statements really from law enforcement authorities in Crystal Lake. First was the Jim Black, the police chief of Crystal Lake, and then FBI Special Agent Jeffrey Salal talking about criminal charges against the parents of AJ Friend today, Andrew Sr. and Joanne Cunningham, each facing 5 counts of murder in addition to several other charges. The police saying that they found the body of AJ in a shallow grave in a rural area near Woodstock. John Williams?
Sounded like he didn't want to talk much about the evidence, but he mentioned forensic and cell phones, so I wonder if there were some pings or something that put the phones in that location, and that's how they were able to then come back to them with more compelling evidence.
Maybe some texts or things like that, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's possible as well.
So murder on his part is the charge.
On both parts.
Oh, really? I noted aggravated battery, various descriptions, but both are charged with the murder. You caught that, right, Steve? Both charged with murder? So that's
my understanding, John. Now we'll have to go back and confirm that. Now
we just heard it live, and we were both taking notes. Maybe you heard it as well.
Yeah, so, John, murder against both.
Murder against both.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Shame on me. And failure to report was also one of the things that they've got a long list now. The two of them are in custody.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Here's John Williams.
Not too hard today to come up with some big thoughts. This is a sad day in Chicago. It's the outcome many of us feared. At least we know the outcome. It's not satisfying what it is, of course. That doesn't console us in any way. You've been wondering what the story would be, and there's your worst fear realized in the case of AJ Friend. I'm John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. On social media, we're WGN King John. And if you want to text us or call, the number is 312-98. What is the phone number here? 312-981. You can talk on the radio.
7200.
I don't know why I just did that. 312. What is the number again here, Steve? 981-7200?
7200, yeah.
They should write that down. Put it in front of the host. I think it would really help. We have reams of texts and phone calls today. And I said earlier that I'm just sharing with you my frustration that a system that knew that this was a troubled house didn't do more beforehand. And now we're all wringing our hands about what's happened, knowing full well this could happen again. And what are we going to do about it, right? So the police chief in Crystal Lake says a few things, and then the FBI agent gave some statements that I thought were very odd and awkward, but I guess you get to congratulate your team, so there he was doing that. 815 texted in and said, King John, we can't even force parents to get kids vaccinated. How are we going to more readily remove them the way you say? Yeah, I understand that. 309, our grandson plays hockey, and every time he has a substitute teacher and they see his bruises, they take him to the principal to see if they should contact DCFS, even if it's in his school file that he plays hockey. I don't mind that. Obviously, medical professionals, teachers, they're all, what is it, required reporters? There's a description of what they are. But there's some people who, by their occupation, are required by law to report anything they see as suspicious. And teachers are among them. King John, your plan to remove children from their home at first appearance of trouble has one major issue. Where are you going to put all of these kids once removed from parental custody? Not enough resources to protect them and house those children. And oftentimes the alternative is just as risky as leaving the child in their home. I understand that. You know, money doesn't solve everything, but I guarantee you if we decided to spend more money on this, it would help. You'd get more caseworkers. You'd give them more resources. I don't know, maybe financial incentive is enough to get other people involved in housing children who are removed from their kids. John, don't forget the girl found in Joliet underneath her couch. A lot of you have pointed that one out to us. Mandatory drug testing every 30 days should happen until the child turns 18. If the child was born with drugs in their system, says Alan in West Dundee. Well, you and I aren't king, but that's okay with me, Alan. I have very little sympathy for parents who allow their kids to live in these kinds of conditions. And you may say, well, that's unjust and that's wrong that the state has done that. But I'm willing to trade that wrong for the potential wrong of these kids staying in their house. I mean, you and I don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what's going to happen. So pick a side. You want to roll with the family, or do you want to roll with the state?
So are we going to have a referendum here for the tax on this? Not that this is about money, but, you know, you've had several callers talk about resources here.
Yeah.
So are we going to have, you know, a DCFS check where, you know, if people are saying things like this, then they're willing to pay an extra $150 a year for it or things like that?
Right. If you told me where that's going to come, right, I don't know, would there be a special surcharge? You want to check the box on your state income tax return? Do you want $100 to go to DCFS? Maybe that would be a way to do it. Or maybe just tax people outright. I don't know if it's a special tax or just a reallocation of state funds, of which we don't have enough. There's the governor saying, what do you want me to cut 15%? You want 15% fewer cops? 15% more potholes? You want 15% fewer cases examined? So we got to raise taxes. So figure that out. What was that, Elif? What were you saying?
They're called mandated reporters or mandatory reporters.
Yeah, right.
Teachers who are required by law to report anything they see that's suspicious on kids.
But, you know, then that triggers maybe an investigation or a file. But then what happens? DCFS comes and they see this stuff and And then what? And then what are they going to do about it? You know, they don't literally walk in and throw the kids in the back of the car and drive them away. And I was most appreciative of those of you who have called, who are drug counselors or investigators into situations like this. If you've been listening to the show, people have been calling and saying stuff like that. And one woman said, okay, I'm involved in that, and I have a broken window at my house. If you came to my house right now, I've taped it up. It's in my bedroom. It's the inside window, not the outside one. But the police could come to my house and say, well, there's a broken window. Does that mean that you should take my kids away from me? It's more than just that, but I understand the road she's walking down. Oh, fair enough. But I don't know. It just seems to me like there are instances where you say, okay, this one's an easy call. This is John Williams wanting to be king again, right? Every now and then I just go, that's an easy one. This one sounded like an easy one. Rebecca, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, I keep hearing, you know, repeatedly blames to DCFS. And, you know, there's the compassionate side, too. But I haven't really heard a lot of people mention these lawmakers and lobbyists. You know, they'll advocate for things that are going to pay them. But I don't see them advocating for children on the long term. Because let's face it, DCFS employees have had low staff, high caseloads, and extremely low pay for the service they do for children since before I can remember. I mean, let's face it, we're talking about Governor Pritzker on another story with his Gold Coast toilets. Yeah, no. You know, and now you just mentioned raising taxes. There's things called career politicians.
What an interesting point. I mean, everybody wants to reduce the taxes they pay, and there's our billionaire governor pulling out toilets to reduce his, I believe it was property tax. And the timing just could not be worse on that. And hey, fair enough. That's on you, Governor.
Like, why are we not asking those kinds of questions? And when you do see a politician, and this is just, you know, an observation, an opinion. I'm not saying that there's not good ones, but let's face it, whether red or blue, they're all from the same boat. And if it's not advantageous to them, then they're not advocating things on the long term. You know, they may make a bill because something happened to a child, but is there things happening from their camps afterwards, after that bill has passed? Are they just as passionate about it?
Oh,
before,
no.
because they're not getting that publicity any longer.
All right, I got to go. Rebecca, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your thoughts. Elif, did you look up what the average DCFS worker makes?
Yes, and it was $39,000 according to Indeed.com, but I'm looking at money.usnews.com, and I see median salary of 44 okay. in 2017.
39 to 44. I'll bet you that the education for a DCFS worker is, I'll bet on average, a bachelor's degree and maybe on their way to a master's in social work. And I know a lot of people that go down that path and that's what they do. You know, we've been decrying what people pay in tuition, knowing what their income is going to be on the other end last ever. And I've always sort of shook my head. Parents who say, my kid's going into social work, because my heart goes out to that family and to that kid. I'm like, oh, hooray, good for you. That's such an inspired calling. But then I just think, oh, but you're not going to make a lot of money. And that's not an end all, but you do have to pay your tuition bills. And you do want to drive a car and have a nice house someday. How can you make a living on $39,000 a year if you've got student debt, et cetera, et cetera? And that's not starting pay. I asked you to look up average pay, and you're finding 39 to 44, right? 39 to 44?
Yeah.
Scott, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good, John. Thanks. Just wanted to comment. A lot of you're coming down on DCFS and expecting the government to fix things. But where's the family and friends in this? I mean, I've got to assume there's grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, friends, neighbors. If I walk into my brother's house and there's dog duty on the floor and the house is in a shambles, I'm going to start asking questions and offer support or look for resources to help them. And the government is really the last line of defense. It's family and friends that can intervene a lot sooner than the government can.
That's an interesting point. Fair enough. I'm glad you called. Thanks for holding. I know you're on hold for a while, Scott. Thanks for getting in.
Yep, thanks.
Lisa, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Hi, John. I just wanted to point out that there are animal rescue groups who go into similar deplorable conditions, and they remove dogs and cats from houses that are in disrepair, just like this one. And yet we can't find a way to remove children from the same situation. You know, a lot of people don't say they don't understand how these parents could do that. But I remember reading an article about mass murder some time ago that people don't understand how people can do the things that they do. And the author said, be glad that you don't understand it. Most people can't understand it because it's not in their makeup to do such deplorable things.
That's a really good point. You know what I'm thinking, too, when you mentioned that we remove pets from houses that are in this kind of condition.
Mm-hmm.
If you've tried to adopt a pet, if you've tried to shelter a pet in Hinsdale, it's very complicated.
You're investigated.
Oh, my
You're
gosh.
Investigated.
There's
yes.
forms and interviews, and they come to your house, and they kind of look around going, well, what's that all about? And,
right.
And, you know, and if
but
you don't pass.
Children.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's crazy. Mm. Thanks for the call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Have a good day. All right, it's 2:19. Listen, this is all we've talked about since 1 o'clock and a little bit before that, for that matter. And we're going to change subjects here in a few minutes. I do want to just read a couple more texts. Maybe we'll have time for one more call, and then we'll move on. I'm sure Ro and Anna have some things to say about this after 3. 847 texted, though, and said, so judgmental of you all. How does one fix a window without money? Maybe some compassion for a family in need. Instead, we advocate for non-resident children and families. I'm not against immigration or at all. This country has been built on the backs of immigrants. However, we look the other way when we see a neighbor in need. Shame on all of the judgments. Not sure how immigration ties in there, but I understand the point that some people are poor. Some of them simply don't have the resources to do the things that you and I take for granted. So thanks for the text. I'm not arguing with you, 847, but really you can pick up. I think you walk into somehow, this sounded like a drug house. This sounded like addicts who couldn't care for themselves and they couldn't care for the kids. You didn't have to smell that house to know that, but when you did, you did. I mean, that's what the police said. It should not be that difficult. I'm hearing you, but I'm being stubborn about this too. Okay, it's 2:20. Are we going to talk to the ACLU after 2:30 a little bit about this? They've had some things to say when they've looked into these sorts of stories as well. We reached out to DCFS, and again, I hope someone from DCF is listening today and understands that I have not heard a person here blame DCFS. I've heard all of us just say, doggone it, we need to do something. And I've heard some of you say, yeah, and then we'll forget about it. Let's try not to. Normally on Wednesday, speaking of food, we visit with Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. Because of this ongoing news conversation, we've asked Phil to take a pass and join us again next week. And we will talk with Phil about dining in the Chicago area. I discovered what I promoted before today's show was discovered. The best Chinese restaurant in Chicago. You've heard of Duck, Duck, Goat, Three Girls and a Goat. Stephanie Izzard has a few restaurants in Chicago. We had never eaten at her Chinese place. We did on Easter Sunday. We did brunch with the family in the morning, and then in the evening we just ordered out. And it was the first time we'd been to Duck, Duck, Goat, or actually had it to carry out. And that is a game changer. Phil and I will talk about that another day. If you want to drop what you're doing right now and call my friends over at Next Door and Window, they'll get you 40% off the installation of windows and doors with 18 months of interest-free financing. Call 1-800-NEXT-DOOR to schedule your free estimate. Next Door and Window installed beautiful, energy-efficient Marvin windows at our home. We loved their approach from the beginning through the job's finish. They weren't pushy. If you don't buy, they don't call you the next day and harass you or promise something else that they did in the first day. It's all up front. They came and did an energy audit of our windows and doors. We talked about our budget, our timeline, what our priorities were. They worked with us. And then the next year they said, hey, do you want to do something else? And we said, yeah, but let's structure it this way. And they said, okay, you let us know. Don't you want that kind of approach with somebody that's coming into your home? And then they do such a good job. Oh, man. Next door and window. If you've got old creaky windows, if they don't shut properly, don't be embarrassed. Don't be ashamed. Give them a call. Let's get that job done, especially now with 40% off the installation of windows and doors in 18 months of interest-free financing. It's a free consult. So, heck, 1-800-NEXT-DOOR. Call them, 1-800-NEXT-DOOR, or visit 1-800-NEXT-DOOR.com. All right, I promised you we'd break this subject after the break. We're going to break this subject after the news. I want to pick up a couple more phone lines. We start with Ms. Garris. You said line two. So that is Greg. You're on WGN. Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm good, Greg. What's on your mind?
I just want to call in response to the last caller that about family intervening. The family did intervene. I worked with the grandmother for many years. And she already had taken one of that lady's kids and raised that her kid. So the family did try to help out, but it's just a really bad situation that a lot of your callers obviously don't understand the full story. So when you speak of Ms. Cunningham, She has even an older son that the grandmother raised, and, you know, so don't think the grandmother is no good. It's just that, there's a lot more to the story than all your callers understand.
I hear you, Greg. Listen, excellent. Thank you for the phone call. I appreciate you tuning in and joining us.
Take care.
Yeah, you too, sir. We'll go from there to Jim on line four. You're on WGN. Hi, Jim. Oh, I'm sorry. Is it, pardon me. Okay. Hold on. I hit the wrong button then. Dawn on line four. Hi, Dawn. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Dawn. This is John. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to say that I am raising a niece that I removed from her home because I was her guardian from when the state had removed her several years ago. And for me, my family has nothing to do with me for the most part because I've done this. I get no financial help from anybody. I'm 53 years old, and I'm raising a special needs niece because she has fetal alcohol syndrome, which is a host of behavioral problems. It's just not always as easy as I would do anything for my niece. But it has come at a great cost to me, and I feel for these children that don't have those people that step up, because I was raised in the same situation, and nobody stood up for me, but it's got to be a community fix, a government. I mean, it's all of us. It's not just family. It's not just government. It's all of us, and I'm sorry to look at it this way, but people like this couple, they need to quit having kids. She's pregnant with another baby, obviously already overwhelmed with life the way it is. And we all have to start making better choices for everybody. Our kids are just lost. Hello?
Oh, listen, you're amazing. You're amazing. Well, on behalf of that niece, I'm sure glad you're doing what you're doing, Dawn.
Well, that is the only acknowledgement that I get for it, is knowing myself that I'm doing the right thing for her. Because, like I said, my family wants nothing to do with me because they want her back in that lifestyle. Mm. And I just couldn't do it.
That's the thing. I said earlier, these people clearly don't want kids. They don't want their kids. I don't know why they would be resistant to state intervention or family intervention, especially if it's going to an aunt. Then more, wouldn't that be a win-win, right?
You would think so, but my mom has been the biggest, whatever you want to call it. I mean, she is so totally against it. Hmm. But like I always tell my husband, she didn't have anything. She didn't have a problem raising her own kids in the same environment.
Right, right.
And three of the four of us, I'm the only one that's not, are raging alcoholics. And I wanted more for my niece than that, and I don't know why it's acceptable. I've struggled with it. I don't understand it, and I don't know why we're so willing to leave our kids in these situations.
Well, know that you did the right thing, Dawn.
I live it every day.
Know that you did the right thing. Know that you did the right thing. I'm out of time, but thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Joan, I'm almost out of time here. You'll be my last call. What did you want to say, Joan? You're on the air.
Hi, I am a case manager, and I work for a private agency. And you could not believe the amount of stress and paperwork that we have to go through as case managers. You're not supposed to have, I believe it's more than 15 cases. I have over 25. I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to do as far as getting in these homes and making sure that they're safe. But then when you get someone on your job that quits, and people are quitting in droves at private agencies and DCFS because it's too much. We have to enter everything into the computer now in a system that they call SACLIS. That's on top of written paperwork that you have to do. You don't have anyone to help you do this. If someone quits, they want you to cover the cases until they get a new worker. That could take forever. Now you're already over 25 cases. And I don't know what they're paying DCFS. I know if you've been there any time, you could make $50,000 plus, but it's not worth the money because people are having to get high blood pressure pills to do this job.
I can imagine.
It's terrible.
Pardon me. So do you work for DCFS?
I work for one of its assigns. It's a private agency. They contract cases out to private agencies because years ago, They had a lawsuit because
right.
And they had to contract cases out to private agencies because they didn't have enough people to get out into the field and do the home visits.
Joan, I'm out of time, but do you mind sharing with us how much I'm just interested in how much money we're committing. Not that that's the solution, but we're not going to get behind this if we don't have enough money to pay people and pay them enough to keep them in the work. How much money do you make doing this?
$40,000.
Well, I appreciate the work that you're doing, and I appreciate your phone call, Joan.
You're welcome.
Okay, it's 2:32. That's the story I think Steve's going to start with. We'll let Steve wrap this conversation up, and I'll change subjects after the news. And Roe and Anna will visit with you after 3. Nicely done there, Steve Bertrand. Do you get nervous when you're handing it off to the next host and you don't see the host in front of this microphone?
Honestly, we have computer problems in here. I wasn't even looking at you.
I saw you sort of drag those last few words out, and I said, yeah. Now that's a pro, walking those last syllables out as I walk up to the microphone, seamlessly creating the illusion that we're all in the same place together and on the same page, as it were.
Thank you. I'll take credit for that, but it kind of really was an accident.
I'll take what I can get. It's 2:38 on WGN Radio. Rokan and Anna DeVlantis at 3. White Sox baseball a little later on. We spent the last 90 minutes talking about the A.J. Friend case and the discovery of a body northwest of the home that appears to be A.J.'s. The parents, as you just heard, have been charged with aggravated battery and murder. You know, when you drive by that house, it doesn't look that different than other houses, at least if you're going fast enough. Then you look closer and you see the peeling paint, the broken windows. This based on my watching a little television today. But it's just such a troubling case. Thank you for the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of texts that have come in, and maybe as many phone calls. When the lines jam up, it's hard to say how many of you are calling, but that's just been the focus of this community for the last week, Wednesday to Wednesday, and now we have that painful resolution. We'll see what happens to these people. And a lot of us have been talking the last 90 minutes, right, about DCFS and caseworkers and stuff like that. And I just want to mention this one last time. We reached out to DCFS, and they haven't been able to get on with us today. That's fine. But in just doing a little clicking around today, I also saw that the ACLU has a case against DCFS, which is something that I'm not fully aware of. Claire Stewart is an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union here in Chicago, who has been quoted in speaking about the case that the ACLU has against DCFS. And I've been saying all day that I don't know that it's fair to find fault with an agency that maybe doesn't have the resources to do what we ask them to do. So Claire is on a phone line for a minute just to kind of clear that up for us. Hi, Claire. This is John, and you're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm okay. How are you?
Good. Is that the fair description of what's going on here? And if so, is it the problem with the state not giving DCFS the resources, or is it DCFS not doing a good enough job?
So we think it's a combination of both. We don't know all the facts yet about what happened in this particular case, but we do know that the family had prior DCFS involvement. And from our perspective, this is another example of how broken DCFS is and how far they need to come to fix the system, particularly on the front end when kids first become involved with DCFS and their families. And that requires commitment from leadership within the department and also leadership from the state to provide the department and its workers with the resources and services that they need in order to do their jobs and keep children safe.
All right, but I'm going to give you a magic wand, but I'm not going to give you any more money. So what are you going to do differently if you're DCFS?
I do think that, you know, there are clearly under-resourced areas within DCFS that do need more funding. But leadership is the most important thing that the department needs right now. And it needs leadership that is willing to acknowledge the problems, to respect children's rights, to be transparent about what the system does and doesn't know, and who's willing to work with the public, work with the legislature in order to learn from mistakes that have been made and figure out where these problems are arising from and to address them. So, you know, we've just had a change in the leadership of the department, and I know the current director or the acting director has only been in place for a few weeks, but we are hopeful that that level of leadership that is so critically needed to keep children safe really makes a difference.
One last question for you today, and then maybe we'll talk again down the road. But so this is an open suit. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, we filed the lawsuit several years ago, essentially requiring DCFS to provide a constitutionally adequate level of care for children who are in its custody, because they are responsible for the care and the safety and well-being of youth who are in their custody. And so we have been working with and fighting with the department for several years to just achieve that minimally constitutional level of care. And the revolving door of directors in the past several years at the department has made the kind of sustainable progress in improving safety and getting kids into safe homes has made that even more challenging.
Well, I've said this about 22 times on my show today, Claire, but I hope that the governor and state lawmakers are listening to the people calling in today, because they're angry, they're frustrated. They already know they don't want their taxes raised and that the state's broke, but we need to set priorities. And clearly this is not high enough up on the poll, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The most important thing is for the director and for the state and the governor's office to put these children first and to always elevate their safety over other concerns.
Hope JB's listening. Somebody tell him we said this on the radio today. Claire Stewart's an attorney with the ACLU. Claire, thanks for your time today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
It's 2:43. This is WGN Radio. John Williams here. CNN's been covering this story today, too. I've got the screen up. It was just interesting to see them go back and forth between Crystal Lake, Illinois, and then wherever the president is at any given time. By the way, on our way to Redstone, we went to Redstone last night. Brenda and I did. We saw our friends Nancy and Sue Kelly of Kelly Cruises. We're doing that big trip to France. We're going to go to Paris for a couple of nights and then up the Seine to Normandy. And we will be there on the 75-year anniversary, this is, of D-Day. How profound is that going to be? And then we're going to come back down the river, Seine, back to Paris. And they said, you know, the boat almost sold out right away. As it turns out, they have a cabin in each class, the least expensive to the suite, and just about one in each. I say all of that to say this. I don't know if maybe your tax return came back or your tax bill wasn't as high as you thought it was going to be. But if you ever thought you'd like to go to Paris, and what happened at Notre Dame doesn't, I think, impact this in any way. Maybe you were going to go and now you can't. Maybe you're curious to see. It's, I think, just going to be another somber part of the trip. But France is spectacular. And Paris is one of the great cities of the world. And those river boat tours down the Danube or up the Seine are really special. We've done these before. It's amazing how luxurious those boats can be inside. And the food that we had on our last river trip with Ama Waterways was off the charts. It was the best we've ever had. Wine, too. And now, as we're going up the Seine, we'll be sampling the local French wines as we travel through France. So if you have ever thought, I'd like to go along, I don't know, how are we going to do France, Paris, whatever. If any of that sounds appealing to you, I would definitely call Kelly Cruises today, particularly since in each price category, they still have a spot available. And once those very last units in each of those price categories are gone, then they're gone. But it's nice to know that it's still a possibility to join us. And it's going to be a boat exclusively of WGN Radio listeners. All the John Williams Show, I guess. Oh, maybe they listen to Rokan too. About 150 of us. It'd be a nice little group. And it's one of those all-inclusive things. So kellycruises.com, visit kellycruises.com or call, I'm closing my eyes to remember the number now, I think it's 630-990-1111, 630-990-1111, Kelly Cruises. And hopefully you can join us for that. Before we met the people, by the way, at Kelly Cruises, Lauren Lapka, we had a drink at the bar, and we went to the bar stools.
Bar stools?
You know, like okay. When you go up mm-hmm. to a bar, they have the tall ones.
Did they have a back?
Well, this is the thing. You know what I'm looking at right now? Is a picture of the stand-up seats that are now available on airplanes. We've talked about this before.
Stand-up seats. That sounds awful.
It would be like you're on a bar stool. It'd be like so you don't sit all the way down in a seat with maybe your knees at a 45-degree angle. It's kind of a tall seat with a little bicycle underneath and then a little armrest, but you're more standing than you are sitting for your flight.
I hope it doesn't go back to short seats right behind them. That would be weird.
Right, exactly. And the idea is that you can get more people on the plane if everybody's kind of standing up for the flight. These seats are on display at airports around the world now. And they say this is where the industry is going to go.
Seems bad for any turbulence. Everyone's going to be like, whoa, toppling over.
Well, you'd have your seatbelt on.
Hopefully.
And maybe you'd be holding on. Hopefully they've got rails or something. I would be okay with that because generally, I want to fly first class. Don't get me wrong. But if it was a short enough flight and the discount were high enough, the idea that I'm looking at this seat going, well, you're going to be like that. I'm like, well, I was like that for about an hour last night. Mm-hmm. I just happened to have a Manhattan in my hand while I was doing it.
I wonder if people would lose feeling in their feet from them dangling
after a while. I know. I mean, you really don't have many options to fix it because somebody else is right in front of you and behind you in these similar stand-up seats.
And I'm really short, so regular plane's not too bad for me, which is rare for anyone. But if my little legs are dangling, I don't know.
Maybe we'll get you one of those booster things where you can put your feet on down below.
A little step stool.
I'm just telling you, here's the CNN story. Perched on a bicycle-like seat, my back's pushed upright, and my legs just about fit the space in front of me. So that's what it's like for this reviewer. I'm testing out the newest.
Bicycle?
Yeah, it's because it can't be that long because the next seat is in front of you. So you don't go all the way. You're kind of more standing than you are sitting.
Oh, it's like a roller coaster almost, like those standing coasters?
Right, yeah. It's kind of what it looks like. Yeah, where they whip you around.
Those are uncomfortable. I hope they're not quite like that. I don't know how I feel about this.
They call it cattle class.
Cattle? Oh, no. Just to make people feel even worse for not being able to afford a flight.
This is what the industry is looking at. So, but if you were, say, if you're going to France, you don't want to sit on that. But if you're leaving Chicago for Indianapolis or Cleveland or Detroit, Minneapolis is 70 minutes. if instead of $200, I could get that for $79. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you said, hey, maybe to put a few rows in there and say, if you're willing to stand like that, you pay half the freight. I think I would consider that.
Yeah, you're basically getting in, sitting down, getting out right away anyways. Just with the process of flying, it seems to go by quick with those flights.
So I'm not totally against it. If it's at least an option for people, if you want to pay less and stand up more, whatever, more power to you.
I would actually want to see it in action and see how it does in terms of all the little things that they aren't, you know. Well,
the two worst words in this review are bicycle seats. That's
yeah, because
I've seen some bicycle seats and they don't look real friendly. But again, I think a lot of us, I'm finishing a 2-hour show right now. I haven't sat down for the last 2 hours. Many of us do the show standing up. At least I do. I think Bill stands up for his show. I'm not sure if Wendy does or not, now that I think about it. But anyway, just a heads up. 2:54 now. Kevin, am I right about White Sox baseball at 6:35 pregame coverage here? Is that what I'm seeing, sir?
That's a 5:30 situation, John.
Like I said, East Coast time, 6:35, 5:30 local. Or 5:30 local, 6:35 mountain, something like that.
Yes, 5:30.
Those of you listening to us in Denver.
Yes, if we haven't already confused everybody. 5:30 here on WGN. Adam Hoge's got your pregame first pitch, 6:05.
Did you see the shot to win the Portland series last night?
Mm-hmm. Damian Lillard, from downtown, basically a half-court heave.
It was, if you didn't see it, just figure the three-point line and the half-court line. Exactly halfway between, and then he does a step back, kind of sideways juke to hit it. I mean, it wasn't even like an uncontested shot. In fact, there was a good defender on him.
Right.
But he does a little step back and kind of leans and launches this thing. They say that people like Steph Curry and Damian Lillard, and there's a handful of guys in the NBA that can make that shot a lot more than you might think.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm watching that. He's dribbling the ball between his legs, Is he going to drive? Is he going to make a play? No, he's just going to juke for 7 seconds and then just launch a bomb.
It's one of those sports plays where you're like, no, what are you doing?
Yes.
Oh, no, yes, okay. That was awesome.
Usually those shots don't go in, and usually I lose my mind when they don't go in because I'm thinking, really, is that all you guys have got is a desperation heave?
You go full-blown basketball coach on it. What kind of shot was that? That was a selfish play.
Totally. I've yelled at Daisy more than once. I turned to our little Dizzy Dachshund. I go, Daisy! But wasn't the score tied when he throws that up?
Yeah, 115-115.
So he has that, right? I mean, so if he misses it, they could win in overtime.
Right.
And then afterwards, he waves bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He had 50 points on the night.
Right, so you'd think, okay, I know that's a long shot, but boy, if anybody's hitting tonight, it's this guy. Maybe I'll get even closer.
He's been fun to watch. He outplayed Russell Westbrook this series.
I didn't know about him and Russ Westbrook, but I guess they have this. They don't like each other or something?
I don't know about the whole... I don't know. The NBA is full of beefs and drama, so I can't keep track of it. It's like the Kardashians, John.
But he makes the shot, and then he just... And so then, instead of going hooray and jumping into the arms of his teammates... He looks over where Westbrook is, and he just goes, bye-bye.
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 Hit him with the basketball, and then suspend him a game.
Cold-blooded.
What's the hit him with the basketball, suspend him for a game?
I'm just bringing it back to the whole celebration and which sport and what, is appropriate.
Yeah. Oh, right. I know. I'm okay with that, but wow.
Crazy hockey last night, too.
Oh, my God. I heard about that. Down 3-0. They put up, three goals in 5 minutes?
Yep. Yeah,
trying to be the Blackhawks.
Playoff hockey, man. Playoff hockey. Coming up on 3 o'clock on WGN Radio, John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio D, handing it off now to Rokon, Anna DeVlantis and friends in Studio A at 3 o'clock.
Yes.
Hi, John.
Look at how right there. You landed the plane right at the mark. It's a gift.
And I was standing up the whole time.
Do you stand for the show?
No, I just listening to your conversation.
I stand during when planes land. I like to stand up and run up and down the aisles while they're landing.
That's not allowed.
The flight crew loves that. Have you ever noticed that there are some flight crew personnel
mm-hmm.
who do cabin personnel who like to tempt fate by getting into their 3-point harness. Or 5-point, whatever the hell that thing is, 5-point harness,
mm-hmm.
right at the moment that the plane touches down. Have you ever seen that? I saw that on my flight last week.
Yeah.
So, in other words, everybody else is buckled in, but they're not yet.
Right.
After the pilot says, flight attendants, take your seats for landing or something. And then they just wait till the very last second. Right. And then they're, you know, they're buckled in. Very daring, some of them.
I used to think that looked like a fun job. And then the more I fly, the more I watch what they have to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why anybody would take that job.
Basically being a waitress in the air.
And
but no tips. Nope, they're there. They're for there safety. For your safety, and they're going to let you know that.
That's true.
I don't. And amen to that. And in instances where you really need them, I guess they're great. But mostly, they're just telling people to turn off their phones, and they ignore them. And I just think, God, this has got to be a frustrating job sometimes.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your captain, Flight Deck. Just remember that your flight crew back there, they're working for a living, and pay attention because they're there for your safety first. And the other thing I'd like to say is we're a little dry. It dries a bone right up here in the cockpit. So if they'd like to drop off scotch and water, what do you need, Wesley? Yes, Scott, two scotches and water. We'll take that. We know you get a lot of options when you fly. Thank you for flying today.
I wonder if that's ever happened where the mic is accidentally keyed in. And
oh, wouldn't that be? you really don't want to know.
Did you see the lady in 4F? Wow.
Yeah.
You go, oh, it's on.
No, that's the thing. Is like, sometimes they'll come out, you know, they take the Carnarvon wagon and they put it across the, like, you know, across the threshold there. Like, that's going to stop you. Like, you know, like at Al-Qaeda training camp, they don't have a guy that just jumps over Carnarvon wagons to see if we can get in. But, you know, the captain or the first officer, they come out there and they're just kind of, you know, they're just kind of out there looking, right? They're just kind of staring, trying to see who's doing what where. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to leave the studio now, but I just want you all to, you know, make a little note on your diary that today you heard Carnarvon wagon and Al-Qaeda training camp in the same sentence. That's never happened before.
That is true.
And so you were there for that great broadcast moment. Thank you, Rokan.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Flynn.
All right. I'm out of here.